Okay, good. All right. Okay, good morning and welcome. This is Henry Harris, and it's another installment of the weekly Emory Teleconference. And in this week's installment, what we're going to do is we're going to look at a fascinating thought experiment that kind of illustrates the idea of the gift of divine thought. We're going to review briefly the goal of this call and just see the implications of how this divine thought shows up in our psychological experience. So just to review the goal of this call. The goal of this call to me is about emuna and idolatry. What do I mean by emuna and idolatry? Emuna and idolatry is the goal of this call. That means to say the emuna is the clarity about the truth behind the singular source of all of all existence, and therefore included in that is our psychological experience. That's the clarity about emuna. What do I mean by idolatry? The clarity of the illusion of there being alternative powers, alternative sources to our experience. So really, to me, those are the two kind of twin clarities that this conversation is about. And as I've shared on many occasions, those are commandments. Those are actual commandments that we have as they're referred to as constant commandments. They're unique and special commandments amongst all the 613, and that there is never a moment where they don't apply. There's nothing that we're doing that is in isolation of those commandments. Whether we're helping our child, we're having a conversation with our spouse, we're visiting the sick, whatever we're doing is never in isolation of those two commandments. Those two commandments are the basis. There's four others as well. There's six constant commandments, but I'm just focusing on those two. Emuna and idolatry, the clarity of there being a singular and exclusive power, that being God, behind all of our experience, and idolatry, the clarity about the illusion of there being anything that is an alternative. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to do a thought experiment with me, which I want you, whether you're listening live on this call or whether you're listening to the recording, I want you to close your eyes for a moment. Not just a moment, for a few moments. I'm going to guide you through a little bit of an imagery. Okay, so your eyes are closed, and I want you to imagine in your mind's eye the scene of a beach. There's beautiful yellow sand that's kind of stretching on, and there's it's sunny and it's warm. We're doing a thought experiment right now, so close your eyes and imagine a beautiful beach, sunny, yellow sand. There's delightful blue water that's kind of lapping onto the beach in waves, and you can see the froth of the waves as they break and roll upward. The sky is really just a beautiful bright blue with just a few kind of pillowy clouds in the sky. And there's some children standing right at the place where the water rolls up against the beach. And they're laughing, and they're fascinated by the way in which the water kind of rolls up and covers their feet and then rolls back down, and kind of, you know, they can feel in the sensation of losing their balance almost by virtue of the motion of the water. Now, I want you to consider, inside of this visual that you have in your mind, what is the case to say that you are present inside this image? Now, I'm going to guide you through this without you having to answer. So on the simple level, to say that you are present in the image, one answer to that question is, well, did I imagine myself physically on the beach? You know, did I imagine myself walking through? That would be an obvious way in which you'd be physically present in the image. But I'm going to suggest that you can keep if you haven't opened your eyes, keep them, close your eyes, keep your eyes closed. I'm going to suggest that you are present in that image, even if you're not imagining yourself as being on the beach with the children. What do I mean? Okay, now you can open your eyes. Open your eyes, and what happened to the scene? What happened to the visual that you imagined in your mind's eye? It disappeared. So what I would like to suggest to you is that as you were envisioning that image, the beautiful scene at the beach, there was really no aspect. There was no molecule of sand. There was no molecule of air or sky that in which you were not present. Why? Because you were the context. You were the source. You were the place in which the entirety of that scene was being sustained and created at all times. It was your imagination. It was your power of thought that allowed that scene and image to exist and to continue. Then you opened your eyes, or you turned your eyes away for whatever you did, and the scene disappeared. Whether or not you precisely experienced the description that I offered just now, or whether you lost track of it or not, it doesn't really matter, because the point is that do you get the metaphor I'm describing? I'm describing the idea that the image of that scene that you that a person can think of in their mind's eye is he is totally or she is totally present in that scene, even if they're not physically walking around the beach, because they are the whole context. They're the place of that image. Now, that to me is such an unbelievably simple but yet profound understanding of the idea behind divine thought. The idea behind divine thought, and obviously there's a limit to which this is paralleled by the metaphor of how Hashem is imagining and thinking of our existence, and it is through his ongoing will to maintain our existence that we are here. But the metaphor to me is very powerful, very clear. It is moment to moment to moment that we are living in and operating in and being sustained by the Devar Hashem, by the will of the Almighty moment to moment. We exist in a manner that is completely and totally dependent on his ongoing sustaining us. And in that sense, all there is nothing here. I'm sitting on a chair, I'm sitting in my office. Nothing exists independent of the ongoing power of divine thought. Now, I want to share with you how this is reflected in the words of the Rambam. The Rambam describes the truth of God's existence in the beginning of his magnum opus, his 14-volume work, which summarizes literally all of Jewish thought and law. And it's called the Mishnah Torah. And this is the first like couple lines, the first, let's say, two paragraphs of that work. And it says as follows: Yesod HaYesodos, the foundation of all foundations, the Amud HaChachmos, and the pillar of all wisdoms, Leida, to know, Sheyesham Matsui Rishon, is to know that there is a first cause. V'hu Mamsi Kol HaNimso, and he is causing all that there exists, all existence, all that there is. V'chol ha'nimsoyim b'shamayim ba'aretz, and all that does exist, all of the effects that we see before us from the heavens to the earth, u'masha b'neihem, and whatever there is that's between them or a composite of them, lo nimsu'u elema mitas himatzo. It doesn't come into existence, it's not caused except through the truth of his existence. Now he goes further and he says, he clarifies, in yale al hadas, if one could imagine, shehu einu matsui, that he is not in existence, ein dover echad yachol lehimatzos, nothing would be able to exist. One could imagine that he did not exist, there is nothing that would have existence. And then separately, v'im yale al hadas she'ein kol ha'nimsoyim milvado mitsuyim, and if one could imagine that all of that which exists in this world, aside from him, does not exist, kulavado yiye matsui, he on his own would have total existence, v'lo yivtol hu lebitulam, and he would not, his existence wouldn't be affected or nullified in any way by virtue of their having been nullified. Why? Shekol Hanimsoim, because all of that which exists, Srichim Lo, everything that exists is completely and utterly dependent on him. Vuhu Baruchu, and he, blessed is he, Eino Tsarich Lam, and he doesn't. He is completely and totally independent of them. V'lo le'echad mehem, and not any one of them. Lefikach, and therefore concludes the Rambam, ein amitas. So, his the truth of his existence is not ka'amitas echad mehem, is not like the truth or the reality of any of these things that he creates. So what do we see? The Rambam is explaining that there is a uniqueness to his existence, unlike any other existence. All existence is completely and totally reliant on and dependent on his existence, and he is completely and totally unreliant on everything else's existence. To me, that is precisely what is unfolding in that beautiful little simple thought experiment in which we imagine a scene in our mind's eye.
Hello.
And only by virtue of our imagining the scene does it maintain its existence moment to moment to moment. The moment we withdraw our consciousness, our thoughtfulness about it, it ceases to be. That's precisely what, as I see it, what we're learning about in the nature of how Torah describes the truthfulness and the uniqueness of God's existence. Now, what is this? Let's go back to what we described as the goal of this call, the clarification. The clarification about the two things, the clarity of emunah and the clarity of idolatry, the clarity that there is only one cause behind anything in this world, including our psychological experience, and the clarity about the illusion of there being anything independently or anything separate that is the cause of anything in this world, including our psychological experience. And just to illustrate where we see this, where everyone I'm sure on this call or listening to this recording has already seen this for themselves, the ways in which we typically lose sight, the ways in which we typically forget and get confused or momentarily mistaken about these two truths. I'm in a conversation with someone right now who, thank God, is seeing things differently, but for a period of time felt extremely beholden to a boss and a spouse. He felt that he had his entire financial security and his ability to have stability and well-being in terms of, you know, being able to care for his family and their needs was in the hands of his boss, and it was creating a very unhealthy and unproductive dynamic, and he just did not know how to assert himself and to see himself in a manner that wasn't highly highly compromised. Right? He was walking around and he could see that it wasn't helping him to walk around with this compromised outlook. He just didn't know how not to view himself as dependent and his security as dependent on this guy's action, and simultaneously he felt that way in his marriage. His wife would become upset at times and would threaten to dissolve the relationship, and he felt at a loss, like my whole existence will become undermined if that were to happen. I am in need of her, you know, staying in this relationship. Obviously, we're all interested in maintaining marriage relationships, but the idea that our existence, our psychological well-being, would depend on such a thing is a misunderstanding. And I would speak for myself, all of those, you know, those truths about the idea of people and circumstances having sway, having actual power over my experience, I can relate to those. And another thing, another example, like before I came into contact with this understanding and I saw for myself something about the nature of my psychological experience and how thought works, how divine thought works, how my moods are themselves the gift of divine thought in this moment. I was struggling with unhappiness, and it looked so clear to me that I kept asking myself, what is accounting for my unhappiness and what am I going to do about it? And the thing I kept coming back to was, there must be something wrong with me. Like, there must be some flaw in my character or in my personality that leads me to be prone to unhappy thought. and unhappy outcomes, unhappy conclusions. And because I looked around and I thought, well, he's not having unhappy conclusions, and he's not. And here I was happy, finding myself in unhappy moods. And it just seemed obvious to me that there must be something about me, my personality, my character, that is flawed. That's the source. The source of my unhappiness in any given moment is due to a weakness. And that is one of the ways in which I think that's one of the ways in which I was misunderstanding. So now, I as we've discussed many times, as I encounter those moods of feeling dependent or threatened by someone else's behavior, or feeling judgment toward myself and my inability to do ABC, whatever the unpleasant, unwanted feeling is, and it looks to me like this is the source, that's the source, but I'm powerless to do something about it, what I now have some understanding about more often is the truth of what we've been describing, the value of that truth that says to, that I can see and say to myself, you know something about the nature of your experience, that it's coming from one source. You know something about the nature of divine thought, that it's not true that your character can be the source, or your personality can be the source of your experience in this moment. You know something about that. And that has been very helpful to me, because as we've discussed, when your mind is less inclined to run after falsehood, it can allow itself to see the truth of the illusion. It just pays a little bit less attention, and that's the gift of the Almighty, the Yashrus that exists within us. We're not here, we're not in need of creating within ourselves the divine wisdom that allows to that can behold and acknowledge this truth. We don't need to generate that clarity. All our job is to do is to stay focused on the truth, and to stay focused on what's true about the illusion of alternative powers. And that is enough. It's a tremendous accomplishment. It's a tremendous mitzvah to see these truths, to see these truths, to affirm them, no matter what our feeling state is. And inherently, it draws us closer to the truth of the Almighty, and that's never going to be a bad thing. It's only going to bring about benefits and equilibrium and Tiferet. Tiferet is balance and harmony. And by the way, Tiferet shares the same root. The word Tiferet, the root of the word Tiferet, is the same letters of the root for Refuah, for healing. There is healing in equilibrium. There's healing in balance. And when we are living with that clarity and more aligned with the divine understanding about how this world operates, that alignment is a balance. That alignment allows for healing. Okay, those are my thoughts for my intro. And now I'd like to turn it over and see, you know, if you have a question, I'd love to hear it. Or alternatively, if you're seeing this for yourself, if you're seeing somehow or another the truth about the illusion, the truth about the truth, what are you seeing? What can you share with us in which this is where and how the gift of this understanding is showing up for you? Okay, I'm going to pause, and the floor is open.
Could I ask the question about the idolatry?
Yes.
Go ahead. Wondering, you know, I never really, I used to think, you know, that idolatry means, you know, something that was relevant thousands of years ago with like wooden statues, and that I am so beyond that and I would never pray to a doll, you know. So
right.
It kind of even sounded weird that why were people so enthralled with this? And now right. When you are giving this completely new understanding of idolatry, it's like, oh, wow. And then I got nervous because this is what I do 24/7 pretty much. Like, I don't leave idolatry. Like, I live it you know? And my question here is, why? I mean, if that's a commandment that never stops, which basically means if you think and believe in illusion, you're breaking a commandment that's like the biggest commandment, why does God constantly send us these thoughts which are idolatrous thoughts? I mean, I am constantly, with every breath, literally with every breath, I get thoughts, and I'm lucky if I, you know, like if I expose myself more to this understanding, you know, I often like get kind of like waking up thoughts, but sometimes I don't get them, and I just get literally with every breath, I get another thought of how something is affecting me, how something is bothering me, how this should be different, and you know what I mean? And like... And it means that I'm living in Avera nonstop. So that basically was my kind of, you know, maybe I'm not getting it completely yet, you know, but that's my question.
Yeah. I hear you. Just to reiterate, so Sonia, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're wondering if this is true, that this is a constant commandment not to have these thoughts of an illusion that there's a source or a cause or a power other than God. Why would the Almighty send us nonstop thinking that seems to suggest otherwise?
Yeah.
So I want to focus on two things in responding to you. One is, and I want to encourage those listening to consider the same. There's two things that I think are always relevant in seeing ourselves and then seeing others. There's the content of our question or our thought. And there's also the feeling state. There's also the mood that I'm, you know, that we can notice. So, like, just for example, Sonia, in your question, there is a bit of a concern and a feeling of like, could I really, you know, there is a worry. Like, am I doing something, you know, mistaken all the time? And how am I? It seems like kind of unfair. But yet, at the same time, there is a quality of. You don't sound totally heavy. Is that true?
Yeah.
Like, there's a certain, like, it's a curiosity almost as an answer. There's a question, but there's also, it's more of a curiosity than it is kind of like a, oh, no, what am I going to do? And that's beautiful, right? That itself is an indication of seeing something. That itself is something to notice and acknowledge as we're walking through our lives and as we're going through our days. There is moments where we see and feel the world through, like, our mind. Like, I think somebody once on the call talked about the idea of, like, our eyes peek up above the stone fence, you know, where we can see something more clearly. You know, the content of your question reveals, like, I don't understand this exactly. But even as you don't understand something, there's a state of mind about it that is a little settled, you know? There's a feeling of calm or settledness, even despite the fact that there's something you don't know, which is valuable to notice. It's valuable to notice that not knowing something or not having something, in this case it's understanding about something, that inherently isn't cause for us to feel rotten. You cannot know something and yet stand in a space of clarity or stand in an understanding, stand in some kind of a feeling of equilibrium. That's what I'm noticing right now in your question, Sonia. And I think it's valuable to see that. And that's a gift. You know, there's a gift. So I'm just simply pointing out we're in that state of mind where we don't even notice it. And it's wonderful to be able to acknowledge, look at that, I don't know this, I don't have this. And yet somehow I'm not tormented by it.
Because it's not causing me the distress.
That's right.
If it always was causing me the distress, then there's no way I could be calm and not understand.
That's right. That's right. So it's lovely to have questions. It's lovely to see and experience something that I'm not clear about. But, you know, it also gives us pause to be able, it gives us, there's a little more freedom to have a question, to have a not knowing in a certain area of our life in a way that it needn't feel urgent. It's funny, one of the things that one of the speakers noticed in the last conference that we just had, and I'm going to get to addressing the question at a certain point, but I just feel it's so rich to notice this. One of the things that one of the speakers noticed in the most recent conference that we had was that the feeling of the conference was a little different. There was less urgency amongst the participants. Like in past conferences, there would be, you know, it's normal that when people feel, okay, something really valuable is being discussed about well-being, excuse me, it was not uncommon that there would be kind of like a, that like sometimes a speaker would finish and there would be like a mob, you know, people coming to him and, you know, kind of like, what about this and what about that and this is going on with my daughter and my blah, blah, blah. You know, there would be a certain urgency behind a certain amount of the conversations. And that was not present in this last conference. I think that there was quite a few folks that have already started to learn about and see something for themselves that were participating in and going deeper into this understanding. And that's one of the byproducts of this understanding is the freedom to have questions, the freedom to have lacks in a way that they don't kind of have us, you know? And so it's beautiful to ask questions, but it's beautiful to understand what's true. So that's one thought. Now going back to just the question that Sonia asked about, well, why is it that the Almighty sends us so many thoughts? The truth is that the sending of those thoughts is the human experience. It's not an idolatrous mistake to have the thoughts because we're not capable of avoiding the thought. The Almighty tells us that he's going to send us those thoughts, right? He's going to send us, as I've shared on a number of occasions, when we speak of, you know, love God with levavcha, with both your hearts, it's in God indicating to us that he's sending us, he's pumping our consciousness the same way he pumps our heart. He pumps our consciousness with these two hearts, with this flow of divine thought that is expansive and peaceful, and he pumps our consciousness with yetzahara, insecure thinking, that leads us to feel at odds and oppositional with the world and at the mercy of the world, etc. He's telling us in advance, he's introducing the presence of those two flows in our consciousness. Our opportunity is to look toward the truth about thought. You know, that's the exciting thing about this learning process, is that there's no, success is not a function of feeling a certain way. Success is not a function of getting yourself to a certain mood. Success is the ability to know what's true and to know what's not true in any given moment, despite whatever I'm feeling. Now, it happens to be that the side effect of knowing that or being interested in those truths is that we end up aligning with the divine understanding and we experience, as I shared, tiferet, balance, and refuah, healing. But that's the name of the game. So the Almighty can send us whatever he wants, you know, he's going to. And that's in no way, you know, that's the deeper learning experience, I think, in this, is that we're not our thinking. We have thinking, but we aren't defined by or in any way compromised by the nature of our thinking. The Almighty is the source of our thinking. And we have a choice to make in terms of looking in a certain direction or acknowledging what's true or not true about it. But we're not our thinking. It doesn't sully me that I am visited by thought that suggests an idolatrous quality to the world.
So what if I act on that thought?
Okay, if you act, then that's a choice. But keep in mind that, you know, as I've also shared in the past, acting on the thought, acting is an interesting idea. Acting suggests free will.
Exactly.
But our free will is referred to as, there's something called the nekudas habechira. There's the point of free will. Our free will is quite small. You know, the nature of our experience of free will is relatively small in that it's a moving target, and there are many times where I see this, that I kind of wake up to my reactivity after I've already reacted.
Yeah.
What that means is that, like I get upset and I'm blah, 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 why this and why that, and I speak to my wife or one of my kids, and then it's only, you know, I don't know when. It could be a moment later. It could be a day later. It could be quite a bit later. I awaken to the fact that, like, wait a second, that didn't need to go that way. Like, I treated that circumstance I acted inside of a logic of, you know, she said this and that made me upset, you know, and that's why I reacted the way I did. I can see the presence of that logic in my reaction. Well, I didn't see it in the moment, but I see it now. Well, what do I do? You know, I have the gift of clarity now. I know that the Almighty arranges for me to work through a certain, you know, it's like a tshuva process, you know? Like I've used this analogy before, like he parachutes us down into a certain location. We didn't choose the location. And he says, get from point A to point B. You know, I see that I am not standing in total equilibrium with regards to anger or, you know, reactivity. But I trust that he's placed me in a situation, in a place that I'm prone. I am definitely prone to certain mistaken thinking. But I value the opportunity to see what's true about my thinking, even after the fact. And I also trust that he's helping me. You know, he's helping me align more deeply with the truth. So I don't use this as a justification to speak not nicely to my wife, like, well, he gave me the thought, so what do you want from me? But at the same time, I'm less ashamed by my reaction, and as a result, I'm more inclined to look at it and think about what can I do and how can I, you know, seek out this. I see it as a divine partnership. The Almighty sets me up with thought that is upsetting or that feels insecure. I take the bait and then wake up to the fact that I took the bait afterwards. Okay, there's tshuva. At a certain point, I get I'm interested in the truth behind my mistake, the illusion I lost, you know, I fell into. And then I go back to my wife and I say, you know, I did it again. I'm sorry. I see that I kind of succumbed to insecure thought in a way that made you responsible, and I acted in a way that was not sensitive. And I'm sorry. I'm really sorry for the way I acted. I didn't know how to do it differently in the moment, but at the same time, I kind of acknowledge, well, the Almighty wants me to own it and to acknowledge that there it's possible with his help to see the world in a new way. And I trust that when I do that, he's going to lift me. You know, we say that a person can't do tshuva without new thought. And the only way that we can get new thought is with divine assistance. And one way of getting divine assistance is to show a sincere desire for it. You know, is to turn in the direction of acknowledging, I trust that you want me to accomplish A, B, or C. I know I can't do it without your help. I'm ready to accept my part in this, you know, to want it. What else? Who's seeing something? Who's seeing something that they can share, an insight or a way in which they gained understanding of something that unfolded either in the moment or after the moment?
Well,
want to make sure that everybody knows. I don't know if everybody knows that they can be unmuted. So I'm unmuting people, and we'll see if they need to then mute themselves up again. It should be that everybody is unmuted now. And even still, it could be that no one has anything to share. That's fine.
Well, I had a thought this morning, actually.
Yeah.
That I get lost like this all the time, and I had a lot of kind of negative and upset thinking about being upset with my husband, thinking that he's being short with me and inconsiderate and this and that. And then every so often I would get the thought, well, it looks like he's not in a very good state of mind right now, sort of, what do you want? But then I would be like, no, but I would just forget about it, and I would again go into like my, you know, judgmental, like, why is he like this? And then this morning, and I had like a whole story I could share with you of all the bullet points of what he's doing wrong and why he's doing it wrong and how he should improve. Mm-hmm. And then this morning, it was still kind of going in that direction, and it was like a lot of my grievances in my mind. And then suddenly I realized, man, he's probably really not feeling well. And I just felt so, like, such warmth towards him, and I was totally amazed because, like, he didn't do anything the way I wanted, like, what I would want him to, like, come and talk to me and listen to me, and none of that. He was just still in his space, you know? But all of that anger and the resentment just suddenly left, and I felt like, oh, shame, oh, I hope he feels better, oh, gosh, I can see, like, he's really just, you know? And it's almost like I felt, like, bad that I had felt all these negative feelings, but then it wasn't like a bad feeling on my part. Like, I didn't beat myself up for it. It kind of, it had a great feeling to it when it was just amazing. I don't know. It's like, when I put it into words, it doesn't really make much sense, but.
Well, what's obvious is that you had a, you're testifying to the truth about the gift of divine thought. You know, about how you went from viewing, nothing changed about his behavior, and your internal experience shifted meaningfully.
Completely.
And, you know, what I wanted, what's that?
Completely, yeah.
Yeah, and you see, that I want to remind myself and others of the great respect there is to have for just the truth of that. The truth of it, I mean, it was lovely that, you know, that Sonia ended up experiencing a gentler, you know, warmer outlook. But I want to remind ourselves that we're not really, as far as I can tell, the goal is not to focus on how to get a warmer outlook, you know. The goal is, it's a beautiful byproduct of living in the truth. But the main thing that we're after is to have a deep respect for the truth. To have a deep respect for the value of acknowledging what is true. And in no way do I mean to suggest that there isn't a value to, you know, to empathy, like to, you know, to just gaining a certain reassurance about the pain that we're experiencing, or the pain, the insecure, you know, sad or strong feelings. You know, I'm not saying just whatever you're feeling, just, you know, truthify it. Just that, you know, just kind of bash it with the truth. I don't mean to say that, because I see that there are times where I am not so well equipped to just, you know, like I'm upset. I don't know how to use this truth to help myself. I guess, you know, all I'm coming back to is just the simple idea that no matter what we're thinking, no matter what we're feeling, there's only one way in which our experience is working. You know, that's really the the kind of the gold standard that we're after is just the simple, simple truth that the Almighty is causing everything, and nothing can be without that, including our internal experience. The gift of thought is the only way, not the lack of understanding, the questions we have, the lack of this, the lack of that. It's not those lacks that is the source of our experience. It's divine thought.
And can I ask you a question?
Sorry,
I didn't want mean to interrupt you.
Please.
Okay. My name is Tanya. I'm new to this, and I just heard you talking to Sonia, and she brought me on a board on this last conference. And
yes,
I remember meeting you,
Tanya. It's nice to hear your
voice. Okay. And I came on the full last day, but everything what I heard, I like it. So I bought a couple of books, and I read one book, and I was so excited. And I, like, every page I would share with my husband, look at this, and I can, like, put my sign in the every page. And I finished this book. And I remember this conference here, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything. And after I finished this book, I'm so depressed. Now I don't have to do anything. And I agree with everything I read. And now I'm so depressed. And I never felt that low. And like before, sometimes you could be better mood, worse mood. I know what I should do. Usually, like, I try to, you know, to do something. I mean, I had a routine how to bring myself in a better mood. But now I don't have to do anything. And I'm like, depressed. And what is my next step? Okay, so now I know it all comes from God, but that doesn't make my life easier. I'm like, it's like I'm really depressed.
Interesting. I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I want to try and understand more clearly. Let me see if I've understood what you said, because it's not clear yet in my mind. You're saying that you're new, first of all. You liked what you saw on the last day of the conference when you came for that one day.
Yeah.
You got some books, and you were, I think if I heard correctly, you saw the truth and the beauty of these ideas.
Yes.
There's nothing to do in the sense of there's no, we're not responsible to create a feeling within ourselves. It comes from God. But then the result of this seeing that has left you depressed?
Yes.
I don't understand the connection between what you've seen and the depression.
I don't know.
How do those
me
things...
either. And me either. And I'm wondering why. I'm like I had life before. Okay, this is really a new concept to me, that all my thoughts come from God. This is really, because I was thinking that I was thinking. So now everything comes from God. So it means, so God made me that depressed now. He put all those thoughts in my head, and I'm so depressed.
Oh, you feel like God is the one filling your head with depressing thoughts, and that's not exactly a nice, warm feeling.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. So that's a very good question. I think that a lot of people can come upon that at a certain point. Like, okay, I get the truth of this, but then it's still the case that, you know, that's all. In your case, what you're saying is now it's even in some ways worse, because... What, before you felt that you could do things to alleviate your depression?
Yes, I can do something. I can, like, take myself out from this and do this and do this. But now it's like I don't have to do anything. Everything comes from God. And he made me so depressed. Okay, what's the next step?
Interesting. Can I ask you for an example of what you would do that would assist you in getting out of depressed moods before?
I don't know. I would go, like, I would, I don't know, go for a walk. I will go out, like, have tea somewhere, like, in a coffee shop or something, and something like that.
I see. And where do you think the idea would come from to go for a walk? or to go out and see people.
I don't know. Now I don't know. Before I was thinking, I was so smart. I come up with all those ideas. And I have it like a routine, so I never go. It's important to catch yourself up before you really go down. You know, it's like, I'm not in a good mood, so let me do something pleasant for myself. And so basically, my idea before was to distract myself from this.
Distract yourself.
Yeah. Mm. But now it's like, if everything comes from God, He doesn't send me this message, distract yourself, just be depressed, that's all.
Interesting. Well, I have to tell you, for someone who's saying about herself that she's depressed, you sound actually okay.
You know, this is my problem. I never sound depressed. I'm like, I don't know, I like life, whatever, but it's like, and this, the thing is, like, lately, like, last couple of years, there is one thing that really makes me upset. And I try to distract myself from this. But now, I got that depressed. And this particular story about this situation came back to me, and I started thinking about this again and again. I mean, it's not like something horrible, terrible. It's like I can tell you that my son told us this year he's not coming back because we've been waiting for him to come back to America. And this is his, no, I'm staying in Israel. And this has made me very upset. It's like, I mean, anyway, before I was trying to distract myself, all right, and he's already grown up, and somehow I got out of this. But after the seminar, and I got depressed, and now again I'm thinking about this, and I don't want to think about this anymore because it's really made me more upset.
I see. So the fact that your son is not returning to live in America was upsetting at a certain point.
He never said it like, that's it, I'm not coming back. It was like, we've been waiting for him for 6 years. And he would say, okay, another year. And this year, he finally said, he probably was afraid to tell us, I don't know, maybe. He said, I'm not coming back. That's it. This is my life. I'm going to establish my life in Israel. Okay. And this is came as a shock because we've been waiting. Next year. He started with 6 months, and it came out as 6-7 years. And now he's saying he's not coming back. So it's like, I don't have this hope anymore that he's coming back.
Right.
So...
So, you know, I think that if you're standing in a sad feeling right now about this, and the possibility of distraction doesn't seem like it, just doesn't make sense to you, that is, I think, you know, distraction is an idea. Like the idea of distracting oneself from his troubles or from his, you know, unpleasant thinking, that can actually be a lovely and helpful thing to do. You know, now to the extent that it's kind of a technique that is a true technique. It's not, right? It's not a true... we don't have techniques to manipulate our state of mind. But sometimes the Almighty sends us an idea that says, you know what, just get out of here. Like I shared with you, I don't know if I shared on this call, one of the guys who I'm talking with these days, when he was learning about these ideas, he said, you know, it's so interesting that you're describing this because my son was recently involved in trying out for a basketball team. Everybody thought he did beautifully, and everyone thought he was a shoo-in to make the team. And in the end, he wasn't accepted to the team. The guy said, I and my wife, the mother, we were so upset, and the son was so upset. And I wanted to fix it and help him. And at a certain point, my son turned to me, he said, and just said, "Dad, I just need a little time. I just need some space." And he went and he kind of did, like, you know, games and toys in his room, you know. He just didn't want to talk about how to fix it. And, of course, the son is 9 years old. He knows nothing about the idea of, you know, the nature of thought. He doesn't know anything. But just on his own, the idea came to him that said, "Dad, I don't want to talk about this right now. You know, let me just go play." And a day later, he was fine. The mother and the father were still bothered by it, but the son was fine. So sometimes the Almighty sends us the idea that says, you know, just go distract yourself for a little bit. Who says you need to think about this right now? And that comes as a helpful suggestion. If we make it into a technique, then it's like it's not going to produce. It's not going to be a deliverer. It's not going to be a. It's not going to be like a reliable help. But when it comes as a suggestion, you know, as an insight from the Almighty, which is what happens regularly, then it works. It's helpful because the Almighty sends us ideas and suggestions. It's our understanding about what's behind that that is what's most meaningful and what's, you know, most deep. And right now, if you're standing in a feeling of sadness, and you don't seem to have recourse to your suggestions or strategies, and it just feels to you like, well, what should I do? You know, the lack of knowledge, as we saw a moment ago with Sonia, the lack of clarity about what to do isn't the direct cause of your sad feelings. There's a flow of thought in this moment that you and I can't see that is the source of our experience. We know that that's what's sourcing it. And like I like to give the metaphor all the time. It's like it's a birth process. When the Almighty tells us he's going to send us contractions and dilations, he's going to send us expansive thought and constricted thought, that's what he tells us. It's important to know what's true about our experience of feeling constricted or expanded. It's not coming from the child's behavior or the this or the that or the other. It's not coming from our clarity about what to do or our lack of clarity about what to do. A person can have lack of clarity about what to do and yet have a sense of inner peace and equilibrium. I don't know what to do, but I'm not distraught or I'm not insecure about the experience of not knowing what to do. That's the deeper truth that we're looking for. And it sounds to me that you're experiencing what's called a test. You're experiencing an asylum. You're experiencing a lingering feeling of sadness, and you have no idea what to do about it, but allow yourself permission because it's what there is. You know, every one of us is giving birth, and there's no other way to give birth than to experience the contractions and experience the dilations. It's not on my terms. It's not on my timing. A baby comes out. There's no other way that a baby comes out. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about an insight, a new understanding that was never there before. It's not coming from me. It's coming through me, but it's not coming from me. And I have an opportunity to let go. Do you have permission to be in a birth process right now?
And you know what, while you were talking, I was thinking, like, it's like maybe because I have, like, standards. We all have standards. To be depressed in a bad mood, it's not a good thing. So maybe I have to think, that's okay, I'm in a bad mood. There is like days like this. And probably to be optimistic, it will go away. It's like you're saying, child will born. So it will pass and like another day will come. Let's put it this way.
Yes. And you can feel the wisdom in that statement that you just shared right now. That's wisdom. That what you just shared right now, anybody listening can hear the wisdom in your voice as you share that. It's a deeper acceptance when you realize the truth about what's sourcing our experience, then you let go of the disappointment in yourself for having the experience that you're having. You know, it just doesn't make as much sense to be disappointed in yourself because, like I said, you know, should you be would a woman in the process of a birth, you know, be disappointed that she's having painful contractions? If I were really good at birth, I should have smaller and less painful contractions. Like, that's, you know, it's ridiculous, right? Oh, my gosh, I'm in my 12th hour of labor. How disappointing, you know, I should be able to get this baby out fat, you know, like, it's silly.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that we are not the authors of the babies coming out of us. We're not the author of the thoughts that show up in our heart, that touch us, that lift us. That we're not the authors of those things. We're the midwife, you know, we're the ones through whom it's coming into this world, and that's our job. Our job is to be a portal for the divine understanding to come into this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what we're here. Every one of us is in relationships. Our husbands benefit, our wives benefit, our children benefit through our understanding how to receive this divine wisdom and not become mm-hmm. lost by it. We are bringing divine light into this world. We are bringing new life into this world. And we are teaching not only ourselves but others how to have what's called menuchas hanefesh, the freedom to be with whatever the Almighty is showing us. Because there isn't, what's the alternative?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome, Tanya. I'm so grateful that you joined the call and that you have, and I'm excited to see what shows up after these contractions.
All right. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
good.
You.
Well, we're basically coming to the end of our hour. It is such a pleasure to be able to join in, and I'm so grateful to have people present on the call and, of course, people present on to listen to the recordings. I want to remind you that you're welcome to send a question or a comment to me outside of the call, either through email at info@JewishCenterForWellbeing.com or alternatively at 845-393-1529. And I wish everyone a wonderful week and a beautiful Shabbos, and I look forward to next week.